Next week marks 75 years since the attack on Pearl Harbor. A new documentary tells the story of what happened using archival film and radio clips. Joining us now is journalist Tom Jennings, the executive producer of The Lost Tapes, Pearl Harbor, which premieres Sunday night on the Smithsonian Channel. And Tom, a lot of the material you used had never been seen or heard before, right?
Correct. A lot of it has not been seen before, but a lot of pieces have been seen before. And this is a big frustration of mine. For example, the FDR speech, the Day of Infamy speech, which was on December 8th, most people have heard the first 10 seconds of that speech. The speech itself is only just under 5 minutes long. And in this type of show, we're able to play the entire thing. And Roosevelt lays out his reasons for war in ways that most people have never heard. So what we try and do is look beyond what is the iconic moment and see what else is there. And it's almost always surprising, and that's a perfect example.
One of the things that surprised me was some of the anti-war rhetoric and that I don't feel like I've seen before that was happening leading up to the attack, not afterwards, but before. Here's aviator Charles Lindbergh. You have a clip of him speaking 7 months before the attack.
I know I will be severely criticized by the interventionists in America. When I say we should not enter a war unless we have a reasonable chance of winning. War is not inevitable for this country. No one will attempt to fight us here if we arm ourselves as a great nation should be armed.
Now, we look back on that now and say, how could anybody have been against war, especially with what was going on in Europe and the Holocaust? But how much anti-war activism was there at the time?
There was quite a bit, actually, and Charles Lindbergh is a great example. He kind of brought a celebrity face to something that was called the America First movement. And he was one of hundreds of thousands of people in the United States at the time that said, we don't want anything to do with what's going on in Europe. We feel bad about it, but we're going to stay here right at home. And what that did was put President Roosevelt in a very difficult position because he wanted to help, especially Winston Churchill during the Blitz years. He wanted to get involved, but he couldn't. So in our film, you'll also see where Roosevelt is saying, okay, we're not going to get involved, but we will become what he called the arsenal of democracy.
Right.
Which means he's going to, you know, send tanks and send whatever materials they need. But his hands were really tied because he knew if he had to go to Congress and get a declaration of war, he wouldn't get it. So it was a frustrating position. And you see that actually in some of the clips that we have of Roosevelt leading up to the war. And when December 7th happened, he was able to break free of those shackles and not only declare war on Japan, but then enter the war in Europe.
By the way, you never see Roosevelt rolling around in his wheelchair, do you? Even when he in the clip that you show of him giving the speech to Congress, I kept waiting to see him walk down off of the top, but you don't.
No, you don't. And actually, just at the very end, you see where he turns and you can see someone else coming up to help him get off the podium where he is at. And, you know, they made I've researched this for other films as well. The camera operators back then and journalists made a big point of not filming him in his wheelchair. They kind of protected him at that time. So it's very hard to find moving images, especially of President Roosevelt in his wheelchair.
Another surprise in here was that the first statement from the White House after the attack came a few hours after the bombing, but not from the president. It was made by First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Let's listen to a clip of that.
For months now, the knowledge that something of this kind might happen has been hanging over our heads. That is all over now, and there is no more uncertainty. We know what we have to face, and we know that we are ready to face it.
The music, obviously, added by you in the documentary. But you say there's an interesting backstory to the First Lady's address. What is it?
Well, the backstory is that she had a weekly radio broadcast, kind of her version of the fireside chats back in the day of President Roosevelt. And it was on every Sunday night. And the president, upon learning of the attack, immediately went into his office at the White House and started writing what would become the Day of Infamy address. However, that evening, Mrs. Roosevelt had her normal radio broadcast, and she had recorded many of those broadcasts because she was not always available on Sunday evening. She had recorded that broadcast for December 7th, 1941. Huh. She went into the studio that evening and went live for the first 4 to 5 minutes of her broadcast, basically delivering to the nation what was happening in Washington, D.C., what was happening with her and her husband, basically telling people it's time to come together as a country and stand up for what has happened, no matter what it takes. So she tagged in a sense, the first 5 minutes of her broadcast live, and then they went back to her basically talking with sailors and soldiers who were stationed overseas about what it was like to be away from home. So it's a very strange mix of we're at war, but here's a feature story about someone who's at sea right now.
One more clip I want to play for you, which is some of the man-on-the-street interviews that were done in 10 cities, including Washington, D.C., the day after the attack. These come from folklorist Alan Lomax. Here's some of what he found.
Were you surprised when you heard the news?
No, I wasn't. I went as far as to predict last week that Japan would attack first.
My immediate reaction was that the attack had been framed by representatives of governments wishing to draw us into the war.
My first thought was, where were the battleships of the American Navy that we'd been taught for so many years that were scouring the Pacific Ocean and various other oceans for our immediate protection? Where were they?
You know, we call that vox in the radio business, and it's one of the man on the street interviews. We do them occasionally, and they always seem like kind of a pain to do. But I now, after watching this, I think, well, maybe one day they'll be historic. You know, we'll hear how people were. It's so interesting to hear how people thought of what had happened the day after.
I was fascinated by this part of our research and finding Alan Lomax's archive, which these archive pieces have not been heard in, 70 years. He did go out. He sent crews out in 10 different cities to get reaction, because that's what he did. Alan Lomax was a famous folklorist in the United States. And what you hear, I was surprised, I was really surprised by how calm people were and how thoughtful they were. And even, for example, one of the people that you just played where, it's a bit critical of the government. Where were the battleships? Or perhaps this was framed, the conspiracy theorist, this was framed by our government to go to war. But at the same time, in listening to these hours and hours and hours of wonderful man on the street interviews, everyone had a common purpose at the end of the day. It was remarkable how that anti-war sentiment, for example, was nowhere to be found in any of Alan's interviews at the time. It was a remarkable thing, a snapshot, albeit a audio snapshot of what people were feeling one day after the attack.
Did you get any better sense after putting this documentary together about why the Japanese would make such a move and attack the United States?
The best guess I can bring up, based on what we've seen and heard, is that the United States was very concerned that the Japanese were becoming too big a power in the Pacific. The U.S. government wound up at the time cutting off their trade of oil and steel to Japan. And Japan, being an island nation and being cut off from oil and steel imports from the United States, it was only going to be a matter of time before they ran out of fuel and before they ran out of materials that they could build war machines with. And so they felt, in a sense, that if we're going to get ahead of this, we have to strike first.
That's Tom Jennings, who is the executive producer of The Lost Tapes, Pearl Harbor. It premieres Sunday night on the Smithsonian Channel at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Tom, thanks so much.
Jeremy, thank you.